Hey, welcome to the Cornerstone Church Podcast, one of the many places that we love to declare Jesus.
We see you in your life living a life of resilient faith for all of your days, and we believe that listening to this message is going to be part of strengthening your faith journey.
Enjoy the message.
I am excited to be continuing our series on the Sermon on the Mount, our series Built for Rain. I want to remind you as we step into it this morning that this is not just a collection of scriptures, but this particular passage that we are walking through is a sermon that Jesus preached to people, meaning he is building a thought towards an end. He has a specific message that he is getting into the people that he is talking to. A message about what it looks like for his kingdom to be established on earth. A message about what it looks like to live inside of heaven on earth, to be those who demonstrate heaven in the midst of the earth, and to be those who build an unshakable life, the type of life that stands and is sturdy. If you remember, we started at the ending because we wanted to know where is it that Jesus is taking us. And where he's taking us in this message is to build our lives on the type of foundation that says winds may come and rains may come, but I will still be standing at the end of it. And so we started his message talking about who we are, talking about the position and the posture that we live our lives from. And then he talked his message into where it is that we are to go, that we are to go into all the earth, that we are to go into all the world. And the next stage that he begins to move into is the behaviors of the life of this new kingdom people, the behaviors that we live from. I think it's interesting that Jesus talks about our going before he talks about our behaving. I think it's interesting that Jesus talks about our position in him before he talks about our behaving. So often we want to talk about our behaving before we talk about our being. We want to talk about our behaving before we want to talk about our going. Probably said more rightly, we want to talk about our neighbor's behaving before we talk about their being. We want to talk about our neighbor's behaving before we talk about their going. But before Jesus talks about our behaving, he talks to us about our being, and he talks to us about our going. And as he's building his way to his point in his message, he says, now that we've established your being and now that we've established your going, let's talk a little bit about your behaving. Now, for his original audience, it would have been quite clear where they got their instructions for behaving on. For Jewish listeners of the time, it would have been clear to everyone listening to Jesus that the outlines for our behaving come to us from the covenant law, from the laws of Moses, that Moses went up on a mountain and came down with instructions given to him from God himself on how it is we are to behave. That this law created the ordinances for almost every part of their existence and their life. It gave them instructions on the way they were to ceremonially behave when they entered into the presence of God. It gave them instructions for how they were to civilly behave amongst one another and organize their society. And it gave them instructions on how they were to morally behave in the things that they considered right and wrong as given to them by God. This is the law of Moses, and it is the covenant that God had established with his people. But I want to remind you that Moses went up on a mountain to receive that law. And when Matthew records this message for us, he reminds us that Jesus went up on a mountain to give this message, intentionally drawing for us the parallel that Jesus is the new, better Moses, that Jesus is coming to bring something that is going to be a fulfillment of what Moses has already commanded. So before we jump into Matthew today, I want us to roll back to the book of Jeremiah. Jeremiah was both a priest and a prophet in the Old Testament. Jeremiah came long after the Mosaic Law was given and spoke to the people on behalf of God of things that were yet to come. In Jeremiah chapter 31, starting in verse 31, reads like this. It says, "Look, the days are coming. This is the Lord's declaration." Come on, it means something when the Lord declares a thing. And it says, "When I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel." Anytime you see covenant, you can also think law. God's Mosaic Law was his covenant with his people. "I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. And this one will not be like the covenant I made with their ancestors on the day that I took them by the hand and led them out of the land of Egypt. My covenant that they broke, even though I am their master," the Lord's declaration. "Instead, this is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel after those days," the Lord's declaration. "I will put my teaching within them, and I will write it on their hearts." Say, on their hearts. "I will be their God, and they will be my people." Jeremiah is speaking of a day that is yet to come. Jeremiah is sitting in one moment, and he is looking into what will yet come through the empowerment of God. And he's saying, right now we live by a law, by a covenant with God that is written on stones and that is written on tablets. This is our covenant, but God is declaring through Jeremiah that this is not the finished work, that these tablets of stone, this law that is written externally from you to be looked at on the outside, is not the finished thing. It's not the completed thing. It's not the already. I don't want you to get so stuck in the way things are right now that you think it's the only thing that God has planned. In fact, I want you to know, as part of this covenant, that there is another iteration that is yet to come, that you should be looking, you should be waiting, you should be paying attention, for there will one day be a covenant that I plan that is not on the outside written on tablets of stone, but rather comes on the inside of you and is a transforming of the heart. It's a covenant that will be written on flesh. It's a law and an abiding covenant that will go into my people, and they will be my people who respond to that covenant of flesh. This is the covenant that will yet be established, the one that is yet to come, not just the covenant written on stone, but the covenant written on hearts. And so in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 17, Jesus gets up in his sermon and he says, "Don't think that I came to abolish the law or the prophets. I did not come to abolish, but to fulfill." Jesus says, "I didn't come to wipe out everything that has been done. Instead, what I came to do is I came to fulfill. I came to complete." Every time that the word fulfill is being used in the book of Matthew, Matthew is referring to an Old Testament prophecy that Jesus is the completion of. He's pointing to something that was prophesied about a future day and then pointing to Jesus and saying, "This is that moment." When he says, "I am the one who came to fulfill it," Jesus is saying that thing that Jeremiah was talking about, where it was going to move from the outside to the inside, this is the thing that I came to do. That thing where the law is no longer just a law of stone, that it's no longer just an external law, but it's a covenant that is written on your heart. This is the thing that I came to fulfill. He says, when you hear me talking about who you're going to be, and when you hear me talking about where you're going to go, and when I tell you about the behaviors of who I am, this is no longer about the rule and the regulation. It's no longer about mincing and parsing words. It's no longer about what's written on the external thing. It's about me giving you a heart transplant on the inside that says, I am changing my people, and I am writing something on the inside part of who you are, and that is now my covenant, that this is the fulfillment. When you see Jesus, you know that that thing that Jeremiah was speaking to has now entered into the situation. Jesus has entered the chat, and it has changed the situation from here on out, that it's no longer the rules, it's no longer the regulations, it's no longer Moses's tablets of stone. They served their purpose, and they had their reason, and they were God's intended covenant, but Jesus came to fulfill them and to expand the meaning of them, to expand and to broaden our understanding of what it means to be kingdom people, to bring heaven on earth. Jesus said, I want to walk you into a whole new type of behavior. My kids have entered this stage of life where the specificity of words is incredibly important to them. They are masters at remembering the detail of exactly what you said. It goes something like this. I walk into a room. Why are you eating candy? I said no candy. The response that I receive is, you said no candy from the candy basket. This candy wasn't in the candy basket. This candy was in our backpack. And you're like, it feels like you knew that what I meant was not specific to the candy basket. It feels like you understood that the heart of the matter had to do with the candy and not its location. And they're like, you said the candy basket. We thought that meant any, but we do. This is the problem with law. This is the problem with rules that are written on the outside and not written on our heart. Is that we're looking for the specificity of the language. It's like, God, you said, I cannot have sex with anybody who is not my spouse. But my OnlyFans account is not me having sex with anybody who's not my spouse. And God's like, oh, y'all thought I didn't know about that. God's like, it feels like you understood when I said that, that OnlyFans account was part of the heart of the matter of what I was talking about. It feels like you knew that the basket was not the issue, but that the candy was the issue. You're like, God, you said we cannot murder anybody, and I have not murdered anybody. But everybody who crosses me off in traffic is definitely getting flipped off. And God's like, it feels like you understood that that might not be the heart of the matter. And so what Jesus begins to do is he takes six statements that are from their Mosaic law that are from the Old Testament law, and he uses them as examples to say to the people of God, I am raising the standard for you. I am expanding and broadening what it means to be my people. I am stretching out because I don't want to get into mincing and parsing words with you. I'm not interested in detailing every single thing with you anymore. I'm not interested in writing out every single line and possibility. What I'm interested in is getting your heart in a posture that says the heart of the matter is that I would live a life pleasing to you. The heart of the matter, God, is that I would stand right. The heart of the matter is that I want what is best in my life in the way that you want what is best in my life. The question is not, have I reached my way all the way to the edge of the line without crossing over it? The question is, am I living a life that is pleasing to you? The question is my behavior reflective of the goodness of the glory that you have poured out on me? And Jesus goes, I am raising the bar for you. And he walks them through these six statements that we're going to walk through today. Throughout this next portion of Matthew, he's letting them know that there is something new that is coming for them. And he begins to stretch it out. I want you to know as we go through these that you can find all of these statements in the Old Testament, most of them in Deuteronomy or in Exodus, a couple of them in Leviticus. I'm not going to list their references right now as we go through today, but your Bible probably has those notes at the bottom. It's a great study for you to do throughout the week. But each one of these statements that Jesus says is a statement where he is quoting the law that they would have had memorized and would live by. The first thing that he wants to walk them into is he wants to walk them into a behavior of peace. That your behavior should exemplify my peace. Read with me from Matthew 5, jump down to verse 21. It says, you have heard it said that our ancestors said, do not murder. And whoever murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you, everyone who is angry with his brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Whoever insults his brother or sister will be subject to the court. Whoever says you fool will be subject to hellfire. So if you are offering your gift on an altar and there you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar and first go and be reconciled with your brother or sister and then come and offer your gift. Reach a settlement quickly with your adversary while you're on the way with him to the court, and your adversary will hand you over to the judge and the judge to the officer, and you will be thrown into the prison. Truly, I tell you, you will never get out of there until you have paid the last penny. Jesus is telling them what the law used to be was a designation that said, look, you can't go around murdering each other, all right? That's just unacceptable and does not lead to a well-functioning society. And everybody was like, fine, we can get along with that. At least most of everybody was like, fine, we can get along with that. But then Jesus comes to them because the designation had been at the place of murder. And Jesus says, I want you to know that murder is not the heart of the matter. The heart of the matter is what you carry inside of you against one another. The heart of the matter is the way that you speak to one another. The heart of the matter is how you get along with each other. other. The heart of the matter is that I don't want you living in anger and hostility towards each other. So yes, you've never lashed out and murdered anybody, but you cuss under your breath at every single person that walks by you in the store. Yes, you've never actually murdered anybody, but you gossip so bad behind the backs of your coworkers that people would think that they were Satan himself and all of their henchmen. Yes, you have never actually murdered anybody, but you have created so many firestorms that how do you come in here and with the same mouth glorify God, with the same mouth that you have been talking so bad to your family and so harsh to the people around you and cutting down? Jesus is telling them, I am broadening, because it used to be that as long as you didn't murder, what came out of your mouth didn't matter so much. And it used to be, as long as you didn't murder, if you had a conflict over here and a conflict over there, it didn't matter quite as much because the line had been laid at murder. And Jesus said, I need you to pay attention to this. The thing is no longer just an external thing. It's about the heart of the matter. I'm raising the bar for you. I'm broadening the thing for you. And I'm saying now that as much as it's up to you, you need to live at peace with everyone. Which means your behavior has to change. It means the way you walk this thing out has to change. It means before you come into the place of worship, that your worship is as much about the way that you treat the people that you live next to as it is how high you can lift those holy hands. That your worship is as much about, can I reconcile this business deal easily and quickly, as it is about, can I come in and get on my knees and cry out before him. Jesus is saying to them, if you want to be people who bring heaven on earth, I need you to remember that you are peacemakers, and peacemakers don't let anger settle in their heart. Peacemakers don't let bitterness settle in their heart. Peacemakers don't run around creating hostility and spewing ugliness out of their mouth. The bar is coming up, and it's not just have you never axed somebody's head off before. It's also, have you used your tongue to cut somebody in a way that does not glorify his name? He said, this is about what you carry in your heart. Next, he talks to them about their desire, that I want your desire to come in alignment with me. It says, you have heard it said, do not commit adultery. But I tell you, everyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery in their heart. Jesus says this is not just about what you do with your external self. This is about what you do in your heart. This is about the heart of the matter. See, there are two extreme thoughts often in religious theory. One of the religious thoughts says that everything physical has nothing to do with our spiritual world, and so what we do with our physical selves is of no importance. And the other one says, and that it is only what we spiritually do that has matter. The other one says that our physical selves are to be overcome and that our physical selves can be broken down and can be beaten, but the Christian thought and the Christian perspective is that your body was a gift given to you by God, and your spirit is a gift that comes to you from heaven, and that your soul is a gift given to you by God. So your internal and your external worlds need to be working congruently together to be the express demonstration of heaven on earth. And so therefore, it does matter what you do with your external body, because it is a gift given to you by God. And it also matters what you do in your soul, because it is part of what forms you and part of what makes you and part of what leads you and guides you and directs you. And God says, what I'm telling you is what you do on the inside is as good good as what you've done on the outside with your physical self. When you walk around and you allow yourself to be led by your internal desires, when you walk around and you allow each other to be seen as objects of desire rather than brothers and sisters in my faith, then you have as good as moved your physical self into the position of where your mind has already taken you. Your thoughts, we were talking the other day, have you ever used one of those VR headsets? You know what I'm talking about? They're like, you put this headset on and it puts you in a virtual reality space and it feels like you're somewhere different than where you are. So we have got to use one of these one time, and it has this rock climbing feature in it where it's like you're free rock climbing up on this tall mountain. Now, you're not up on a tall mountain. You're standing on your living room floor. But the way that it begins to affect your mind is so impactful and is so powerful that you cannot always tell your mind, this is not the real thing. I'm standing in my living room. It's so intense. I put it on and I started like almost like hyperventilating. I was up in the thing and I was trying to be chill because the boys were in the room and I was like, Phil, I need you to get it off of my head right now. I don't particularly like heights. We put it on one of our kids and one of our kids put it on and immediately like hit the floor and was like, Dad, come help. It's a really fun afternoon. Because what happens in your mind is so powerful that sometimes our realities cannot tell the difference between where I have gone to in my mind and what I have done with my physical self. And so Jesus says to them, I'm raising the bar, I'm expanding the meaning. I need this to not just be about what's written on stone. I need your desires to not just be what is and isn't acted out. I need your desires to be coming from a heart posture, to be moved from the inside out. Next thing he talks to them about is he says the behaviors of kingdom people have a lot to do with commitment. Verse 5:31 through 32 says, it was also said, whoever divorces his wife must give her a written notice of divorce. But I tell you that everyone who divorces his wife, except in the case of sexual immorality, causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Now, this is a heavy topic. And I want to move through it sensitively because it has impacted so many of us. If I'm honest, I would have rather skipped this portion. An old preacher told me one time that one of the beauties of preaching expositorily through chapters or through books of the Bible is that it forces us collectively to look at passages that we would rather avoid. And when we move through, we cannot skip over the fact that Jesus says our commitment means something. Now, he addresses it to men giving certificates of divorce. The reason he would address it only to the men giving out certificates of divorce is because within the Mosaic law and the custom of the time, it was only men who were permitted to give certificates of divorce. Women could not apply for or receive the certificate of divorce to end a marriage. I think that it is reasonable in our current society to believe that Jesus would be applying these words to anyone who is capable of receiving a certificate of divorce, that he's calling both men and women to a standard of saying that the sanctity of marriage that you step into has great value. Later in the book of Matthew, when Jesus is talking about this same topic, he expands on the thought and he reminds them and he says, I want to remind you that this was not God's intent from the beginning. that God's intent from the beginning was that a man and a woman would come together in a holy covenant relationship and that they would continue in partnership together, that there would be no need for separation. But then he says, but it's because of the hardness of our hearts that Moses gave a concession. That there is a concession that is made. I think that God is kind to us in the way that he recognizes that there are times that our hearts are too hard, that the situations become too broken and too brittle, that it becomes to a point where it is so untenable that either one or the other of the people are not able to conform to the way that God. Every time we come to a place of divorce, it causes great pain. It causes great hurt. It causes great tearing and great separation. And God's going, this was not my plan for you. My plan for you was never for this pain and for this tearing and for this separation. My plan for you was to enjoy the bonding connection that comes through a sanctified marriage. Yet I see that there are moments where that becomes untenable. And so Jesus is calling them up because what had begun to happen is that men would go and would receive certificates of divorce for all kinds of reasons. They would go up to the high priest, and basically what was beginning to happen was that there was no standard that was being upheld. There was no calling up that was being upheld. Instead, as long as they could find a reason written in the law, as long as they could find something legal enough, as long as we could figure out that this wasn't in the basket, it was in the backpack, then we could write up the paperwork and make sure our I's were dotted and our T's were crossed. And as long as everything was legal, then it was acceptable. And Jesus says, it's not just that this is legal and it's not just that this is acceptable. I'm calling you to something of the heart. I'm calling you to something that comes from the inside. I'm calling you up to a new place that says that there are ways that we can conform to who he has called us to be and see this thing all the way through to the other side. And let's not just blow it off like it's on the people of the Old Testament and these men who would go and get certificates of divorce. There are many of us today who find reason. I've spent a lot of time around Christians, and Christians are really good at this. We'll take, for example, the passage before this, and we'll go, well, Jesus, you said that anyone who looks is the same as adultery. And then we go, well, I caught her text messaging with her old boyfriend, and so, Jesus, you said that that's the same as adultery. Therefore, I have my out. And Jesus is like, yeah, that's not exactly what I was going for. The question for Jesus is not, do you have an out? The question for Jesus is, can you stay? Can you make it still? Can you see your way to the other side of this still? The question is not, do I have a valid reason to get my out? Sometimes we're looking for our out so fast that we can't find our in. When God is saying, I'm trying to raise the standard and I'm trying to expand the purpose here. I'm trying to transform your hearts, and I'm not asking you, do you have a valid out? You might have a valid out. I'm asking you, is there a possibility to stay? And he's raising the standard. Of course, there are times where your safety is a concern. Of course, there are times where it takes two to push into this thing. And it's the goodness of God that in the heartbreak, that in walking through divorce, that he walks with us through the darkest valley, that in the midst of that, there is hope for you on the other side. Yes, he is the God that sees us through, but Jesus is reminding them the same that he's reminding us, that this was not my original intent. My best for you is that you would soften your hearts, that you would be transformed into into me, that you would be transformed into my likeness in such a way that your commitment becomes the marking of who my people are. And then he goes, I want to talk to you about the truth of the words that you speak, that my people are marked by truth. Matthew 5 and 33 says, again, you have heard that it was said to our ancestors, you must not break your oath, but you must keep your oaths to the Lord. But I tell you, don't take an oath at all. Jump to verse 37, just for sake of time. It says, but let your yes mean yes, and your no mean no. Anything more than this is from the evil one. Jesus goes that your words should mean something. See, there was a practice of if I'm making a commitment, if I'm going into an agreement with you, then I would swear an oath by my ancestors, or I would swear an oath by the God that I serve, or I would swear an oath by a family member. And Jesus is saying to them, you shouldn't have to swear an oath by anything in heaven or by anything on earth, because it is a marker of my people that the truth of your words is so sincere that your yes simply means yes and your no simply means no, that there are no additional, you don't have to say I swear on my mama's grave, because I know that your word is so good that if you said it, that means that it's true. If you said it's going to be done in a certain timeline, it's going to be done in a certain timeline. If you said you're showing up at a certain place and a certain time, I know you're showing up at a certain place at a certain time. But some of us have become so wishy-washy in the way and the value of our words that we say one thing one day and then we change our words to mean another thing another day. Some days we're in and some days we're out. Some days we're coming and some days we're not. You know, you have that person in your life that they're like, I'll be there on Friday, see you there. And it's Friday afternoon and you're like, you want to take bets on if they're coming or not? $5 up or down whether or not they actually show up tonight, because you know that their word does not mean anything. It could be a number of reasons and things, but it's always something, because the truth of their word has lost its value and has lost its potency. And here's the thing, is that if God has given for us to be his declarers of his name in the earth, if God has given for us to be those who go and proclaim the gospel truth, then our words need to have a certain weight to them. Our words need to have a certain value to them. There needs to be a certain assuredness about the words of that we carry and the words that we speak. And so Jesus says, don't make an oath on this or make an oath on that. Speak plainly. Speak in a way that I know that when you say it, it's going to be done. That when you tell me something, I believe that it's the earnest truth. That I don't have to wonder if your compliments are sincere to me. That I don't have to wonder if when you say you're in, you're really in. Because I know that you don't have a habit of committing to things that you're not truly in on. That I don't have to wonder if you say you're showing up, whether or not you're going to show up all night. Don't leave your planning center on question mark, letting your team leader sweat all week long. You're a crew member who says, I committed to being here. I committed to being part of the team, and I'm responding that I'm going to be there on time. All the volunteer team leaders are clapping their hands because I hear them when they're like, I hope these people are showing up. Everybody's left me on question mark in my scheduling app. Let your yes mean yes and your no mean no. And then he says, I want to talk to you about justice. My people are people of my justice, not their justice. Verse 38, it says, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, don't resist, or some translations might say retaliate, an evildoer. On the contrary, if anyone slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. As for the one who wants to sue you and take away your shirt, let him have your coat as well. And if anyone forces you to go a mile with him, go two. Give to the one who asks you, and don't turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. Now, when the Mosaic Law came out, it was actually in many ways revolutionary that God implemented a law that said the punishment is equal to the crime. That if there is an eye, take an eye. If there is a hand, take a hand. If there is a tooth, take a tooth. Because it was not uncommon in the surrounding groups, in the surrounding tribes and peoples of the time, that someone who was inflicted could retaliate with a response that was even greater to what they lost for the sake that they had been the wounded party. And God, when he implemented the Mosaic Law, said, for my people, we're going to bring that down a level. And it's just going to be equal to what we've done. But then when Jesus comes and says, this is actually not about what's on the tablets, it's about what's on your hearts, he's reminding them that you are not the one who seeks justice on your own behalf. You are not the one who has to fight for you. You don't need to retaliate to everything that's gone wrong for you. You don't need to strike back every time you're struck at. Instead, why don't you see if there's a little bit more that you can give? It was practice when he talks about the second mile. They were under Roman occupancy, and so it was practice of the time that a Roman soldier could at any time take any Jewish citizen and could require that citizen to carry their pack and their shield and their garments and whatever else they were carrying for them. But the limitation was that they could only require them to carry it for up to 1 mile walking. And so Jesus says to them, if you find yourself in this embarrassing, difficult, heavy situation where someone has required you to carry what is not yours to carry but is theirs to carry, and you reach the mile marker, why don't you see if instead of saying, fine, I've made it just to the limit of what is required, that what is required is no longer the marker. What is in your heart is now the marker. And so instead of laying it down at where you must, carry it the second mile to be a demonstration of a God who sees justice as intricately connected to his mercy, as intricately connected to pouring out what you do not deserve anyway, as intricately connected to the grace of who he is. He says, you don't have to worry about retaliating on every circumstance and every situation. Instead, why don't we see what we can bear without retaliation and trust that God will see us through to the other side, and trust that he is fighting for me, and trust that he is the one watching out for me, and trust that he is looking out for my back, and trust that he will make it all right in the end. And then he tells them, I want to talk to you about love. Starting in verse 43, he says, you have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you to love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. I'm sorry, Jesus, what? Now, what's probably even more important to understand is that the understanding of neighbor at the time would have to do with the people who were like you. The people who were part of your group of people, the people who were part of your community. It's why when Jesus tells his parable, his story about the Good Samaritan, he chooses someone who is not of their group to put in the position of the one who obviously acts with love and acts as a neighborly support. And then he asks them the question, and which of these people acted like a neighbor? The obvious answer at the time would have been that the neighbor was the one who was of the same group as them. But Jesus positions the one who was the neighbor as someone who is outside of my group. And Jesus is saying to them, you have heard it said that you should love the people around you. And sometimes that seems like a hard enough task. But this is not just about what's on the tablets anymore. This is about what's on your heart. And I'm wanting to recreate in us a new heart and a fresh way of living. And when I recreate in us a fresh heart, it's not just about loving the people who vote like you vote. And it's not just about loving the people who were born in your generation. And it's not just about loving the people who are women like you or who are men like you. He's saying, no, I need you to love all of them. I want you to pray for them. I want you to care for them. I want you to bless those when they push against you. He's saying there is a marker for my people that is totally different. When somebody talks bad about you, you love them anyway. When someone tries to undercut you, you love them anyway. When someone decides differently than what you would have, you love them anyway. When someone moves in a different direction than you, you love them anyway. When someone builds something that looks opposite of how you think it should be built, you love them anyway. When people make good decisions, you love them anyway. When they make poor decisions, you love them anyway. When they talk about you, you love them anyway. Jesus is saying, I am raising the bar and I am broadening the meaning of this because I don't just want you to love who is near you, and I don't just want you to love who is like you, and I don't just want you to love who agrees with you. I want you to love everyone that you encounter. I want you to love all of the people that you come across. And he says to them, you have heard it said, but I'm telling you, this is about your heart. You have heard it written on the stones, but I'm telling you, there's a new way of living. Jesus says our behaviors are coming up and they're broadening because we're not just looking any longer for what's the word and what's the line and how do I slide out of this and how do I get just across the edge and can I come all the way up? It's a normal developmental stage for my kids to want to learn the precision of communication. It's a normal developmental stage for my kids to want to push up against the boundaries and find out what's going to happen. It was a necessary developmental stage for God's law to be laid out for us in specific words and in detail for us to learn line on line. And it is a necessary stage for us to wonder, where is the line in this? But I know when I'm talking to a baby Christian, timeline not relevant, perspective, when they're asking questions like, can I still get into heaven if I, will God still love me if I go to, the better question is not how close to the line can I get and not be outside of his will? The better question is, has your heart been transformed in such a way that I want what's best for my life, that I want what's yielded before you? God, that I don't want to live my life finding detail and mincing words with you. I want to live my life with a heart that has been transformed before you, that says your way is better than my way. Your walk is better than my walk. Your desires are better than my desires. Your plans for me are better than my plans for me. God, walk me in your way everlasting. Walk me in your paths of righteousness. Create in me a new heart, oh God. Help me yield in myself everything that's not of you. Help me let down every way I try to falsely justify myself. Help me lay down every excuse I might come to. Help me let go of, God, every false trust that I hold on to. Help me let go of everything that creates a defense for myself or everything that creates a safety net for myself, or everything that feels like if I don't stand up for me, no one's going to stand up for me, or if I don't show up in this space, no one else is going to show up in this space for me. God, instead, help me walk in a way that says that your way is so much better. God, transform my heart. Transform my heart to be pure before you. God, make us new in your eyes. Make us fresh before you, God. God, give us hearts of flesh. I thank you for the fulfillment of his law. I thank you that all things are made new in you, God. If you'll stand to your feet, I just want to pray that prayer over us. That God, you would make in us hearts of flesh. That you would write your word on our hearts. That you would transform us from the inside out. That you would call us up and call us broader, Jesus. God, before we leave today, we want to lay some things before you. God, we want to find peace with you. We want our words to matter. We want our hearts to match your hearts, God. Let our desires be your fresh desires. Jesus, let our steps be your steps. I pray over your people today, God, that you would move us out of finding places of stone and move us into places of flesh.